two parts, which seeing each other. And the first part has to actually be complete holes. So we'll be addressing some of the questions raised in terms of, you know, can we see the holes? We didn't use EM, but we're going to show you images whereby we actually can see the hole formation. Okay, and so the first part continues with a story that has to do with antimicrobial peptide. And the second part is, what happens if you have a hole? Can you seal them? And it can be applicable in a lot of disease states, which we're going to talk about. So since this is a workshop, and since some of you will be here for 3 months, I sort of want to tell you a little bit, just use a couple of minutes to tell you the interest in our lab in terms of lipid-protein interaction, just to hopefully motivate some discussion later on. So some of the system we're not going to be able to talk about today has to do, for example, with the human lung surfactant, which is this mixture of lipid and protein that coats your air sac to help breathing. And so I put this particular movie in because of the discussion we had 2 days ago in terms of the terminology of wrinkle zone versus crumbling, so wrinkling versus crumbling. But now I'm going to show you something that has to do with folding. So don't worry, this is not happening in your lung because this is a very high viscous substrate. But what is happening is that you're forming these accordion type of structure, and this becomes very violent. So you have all these folding in, and you can see it as you're compressing the film, it becomes unstable. It's a two-dimensional film, and you form these folds. But what is happening in your lung is something similar to this. Yes?
Can you just explain what we're looking at?
Oh, so you're looking at, now is the opposite. This is a monolayer at the air water interface. You're compressing it to almost zero surface tension, and the system crumbled or collapsed and formed a three-dimensional phase.
And that's where it looks lighter, so it's scattered more
light. It's bright because you know it has a more concentration of dye in that location. Okay. So my apology. So when you're compressing it, it forms these accordion type of structure. But now when you breathe in again, it opens up and brings the materials back to the surface. So we're claiming that this is a folding transition. It is a reversible. When you exhale, they form these folds, which are three-dimensional associated reservoir. And when you inhale, it actually brings the material back to the surface so we can use it again. So another topic that we're interested in is, how does our cell regulate its own cholesterol level? Can it use the excess cholesterol that is on the plasma membrane as a messenger to tell the ER whether to store more cholesterol or to release more cholesterol? So this is sort of remotely related to the lipid rod question, and we are addressing them both from a physical point of view, and we also sort of torturing cells, feeding them with more cholesterol and different sterols of different sort. Another that has to do with the self-assembly problem and the surface has to do with the aggregation of beta amyloid, which is this fibro-forming peptide that this AFM pictures that has certain chirality associated with it, forming these fibrils. And what we found is that if your membrane has a negative charge, it actually leads to a templating effect. So the question is, does the pathology of the plaque formation that is found in cell surfaces has to do with the sequestration of the peptide to the surface and leading to subsequent seeded nucleation at the interface? But today I'm going to tell you 2 stories. The second part has to do with using a tri-block copolymer as a membrane sealant, but in order to seal up the holes, I'm going to tell you something about how to poke the holes open first. So these are historically 2 separate projects in the lab, and now we're trying to marry them together to try to see how we can use the polymer to help prevent lesion or hole formation on the surface. So since here we talked about antimicrobial peptide, I'm just going to briefly go through this. And in particular, I'm going to talk about a beta sheet antimicrobial peptide, Protegrin 1, which is from Bob Lehrer's lab. And I'm going to talk to you our version of trying to mimic what nature gives us using a completely non-natural polymer to see if it can also poke holes in a system like this. And then we're going to switch gears so that now that we have a hole, how are we going to seal it up using this tri-block copolymer? So first thing first, antibiotic resistance is something that people worry about, and this is sort of the real terror, in the sense that roughly 11 million people die from infectious and parasitic disease just in 2002. And the problem is that you have increasing antibiotic resistance. Another problem that is facing this is that the shift of the pharmaceutical development from developing antibacteria into developing treatment for more chronic disease. So what is shown here is that there's, like, for example, a 25-year span between the latest two antibiotics development. So what we know is that when we go to the doctor, we have to be on antibiotics, and even if we get better, we should finish our whole round of antibiotics, because if we don't do that, we would allow the most virulent strand of the bacteria to continue to go on. And so a lot of antibiotics actually target a specific biochemical pathway. So what is shown here are various pathways that it could target. And Hugh has also suggested that in the case of the antimicrobial peptide, which is what we're talking about, this is a class of peptide that instead of targeting a particular protein receptor so that it is not that hard for you to mutate this conformation of this protein receptor so that the antibiotic action is no longer viable, in the case of the antimicrobial peptide, it's targeting much more broadly of the membrane composition, as shown in the previous talk. And instead of very specific looking at a particular protein receptor, it focuses on a wide range of microorganisms. So it can range from a whole school of different organisms that it can actually attack. And a lot of them have very similar features in the sense that they're all very short peptide, less than 100 residues. They're cationic and amphiphilic, and they can adopt a variety of secondary structure from a random coil to the beta sheet, and today I'm going to mainly talk about the protagonist, which has a beta sheet type of conformation. So,
quick question.
Yes.
Can you talk about why they don't put holes in the host cell membrane?
Okay, so we're gonna look at that. So the question is, what causes the selectivity? So we don't have to go through this. We all know that there is the outer leaflet and the inner leaflet, and then when we talk about bacteria, we also have the outer membrane versus the inner plasma membrane that has slightly different composition. So there has also been models that has been shown in the previous talk whereby you have the peptide in solution adsorbing to the surface of the membrane, and then what is the mode of interaction? Well, we've seen the Berenstain model, and then there's also the carpet model whereby it goes in, changes the orientation, leading to mycelization and the cell death of the system, and there's the toroidal model that is shown earlier. So if I were to torture a E. coli, and this is also from Bob's lab, if I have a control whereby I have the absence of the antimicrobial peptide versus when I put in the antimicrobial peptide, one of the first things that you see is the formation of these arms sticking out, the instability of the membrane that is on the surface. So the question that we want to ask is that how does it really distinguish between the host cell membrane versus the bacterial cell membrane? Because if it cannot do that, then it's a problem. It will start attacking itself. Another question is that, you know, how does the action of the antimicrobial peptide actually affect the membrane lipid ordering? How does it change the lipid integrity? And is there any way, knowing the shape and the secondary structure of this system, can we design something that mimic what nature gives us? So let's look at this particular beta sheet protagonist. The reason why we choose it is because it is a very, very short amino acid sequence, only 18 amino acid sequence. So for those of you in the audience who are doing all atom simulation, this is something fun to work with. And it has a very strong beta sheet structure because it's stabilized by these two intramolecular disulfide bonds. And the source of it is from pig leukocyte, and they can target both gram-positive, gram-negative fungi as well as HIV. In terms of selectivity, so you would think that red blood cell of mammals are similar, but that actually that's not true. Unfortunately, the native state of the protagonist is actually potent towards human red blood cells. So if you want to develop the new wave of antibiotics, this would not work very well, but it does not hurt that of sheep and goat or pigs per se. So what is the difference between the cell membrane that leads to that type of selectivity? So if I were to look at the mammalian red blood cell phospholipid distribution, you'll find that just comparing the PC column, so with a choline head group, the sheep actually has the absence of PC in their red blood cell. Whereas if you were to look at the PE, so both of these are spheroionic lipid, you see that that there is an increase, a difference between the sheep as compared to that of the human. And the difference in the composition of the phospholipid that makes up the mammalian red blood cell actually might be enough to explain the differences that we see in these systems. So in order to really address that, how do the different spheroionic lipid changes the interactions with the PG1, we resort to different model type of systems. So I'm going to first show you a lipid monolayer mimicking just the outer membrane of the leaflet. So if we were to think about the antimicrobial peptide coming in from somewhere, the first thing that it sees is actually the head group of the outer leaflet of the membrane. And to mimic that, we use a Langmuir trough where we spread the monolayer at the air-water interface, and we look at what happened when we introduced the antimicrobial peptide into the surface. So to address the question, how come different composition is being recognized by the surface, we use different head group with phosphocholine, phosphoethanolamine that are spheroionic versus a PG head group, which is anionic in nature. And we look also at this rather larger portion of a lipid. It's called lipid A, which is the lipid anchor of the lipopolysaccharide that form the outer membrane of gram-negative bacteria. So we want to see that how is this little 18 amino acid sequence going to a surface of, say, a mammalian red blood cell versus a bacterial cell surface that might only have the plasma membrane, but and also those that have actually an outer membrane. How does the selectivity go? So in terms of the type of measurement and the type of data that we get is like this. This is a two-dimensional equivalent of the PV diagram in 3D. And what you have is a surface pressure, which is defined as the difference in surface tension between a pure air-to-water interface and one with the monolayer adsorbed. So as you compress the system, you can force the system to undergo phase transition, and we can monitor it by incorporating a small mole percentage of fluorescence dye into the system. Due to steric hindrance, the dye cannot be packed with the ordered phase, leaving the ordered phase dark and the disordered phase bright. So if I were to march through the gas-liquid coexistence, further compression going to liquid phase, you can also see first order phase transition, whereby you see the nucleation of the condensed phase, and eventually the system becomes unstable, and the picture of the lung surfactant that we show you is at that location when the 2D film is no longer stable and have to go to the third dimension. So here you see the gas phase being dark, and the bright phase is the liquid phase. It is dark because it's just void of materials. And whereas in the liquid phase, the dye can diffuse freely, and so it's homogeneous. So that when you have liftoff, when you go to pure liquid phase, that you see a homogeneous surface. You see first order phase transition, whereby you see the nucleation of the domain, and then you see the growth of the domain, and eventually the film becomes unstable and started buckling. So the kind of assay that I'm going to first show you has to do with this. We want to mimic the packing density of the lipid that is on the membrane, and so we would compress the film to the bilayer equivalent pressure, and we hold that pressure constant by a feedback system. Then we would inject our PG1 into the subphase, and we'll see how the film responds to the half-length PG1 in the subphase. If the PG1 is actually taking up physical position at the interface, in order to keep the pressure constant, the barrier has to expand. So by monitoring the relative airway change as a function of time after the injection of PG1 into the subphase, we can get an idea of the interactions between the two species. So what is shown here is that if I have a spheroionic head group injecting PG1 in the subphase, over the time of a 40-minute time course, you see an enhancement of the surface area by 60%. So if I were to do these data and at the same time monitoring fluorescently to see the morphology, you see that prior to the PG1 injection, you see a two-phase coexistence region. And what the PG1 does is actually it destabilizes the domain formation and also changes the domain-domain repulsive interaction, leading to a high area fraction of it being occupied by the disordered phase. If you wait even longer, more of the surface is being disrupted and disordered.
Wait, sorry, PG1 is the protegeron one?
Yeah, so PG1 is the protegeron
one,
which is the PG is the head group, so the DPPG,
okay.
So I'm sorry. I'll try to.
What concentrations need to add here?
Yeah, so this is a
compared to the real situation?
Yeah, so this is the reason why we use this is because there's also lytic experiment on the cell is we are using the same range. So that is the reason why we put it in that range. So if I were to look at the head group selectivity, so changing from the sphingoionic head group to the anionic and now to the big lipid anchor of the lipopolysaccharide, what you see is that you have a jump in the insertion when you have the bacterial cell surface, which is negatively charged, and equally effective it is to interact with the lipid A, which forms the outer membrane of the lipopolysaccharide, outer membrane of the gram-negative bacteria. But even in the case when you have the same charge effect, there seems to be a big difference between a PC head group, which has a big head compared to its tail, compared to the PE head group. And if you recall, in the case of the sheep, it has actually a very high percentage of PE in the red blood cell, suggesting that the composition really plays a role in the propensity of the PG1 to insert into the system. You can also monitor what happened if you have really little insertion. Over time, you really don't see any changes of the morphology. So the changes that you do see in the morphology in subsequent cases is not due to a feedback system that changes or a coarsening of the system, but it's really due to the disruption of the order that is in the interface. So you can change different parameters. For example, you can see that, well, you know, if I have a more tightly packed lipid versus a less tightly packed lipid, how it would affect the ability of the PG1 to insert. So what is shown here is DPPG monolayer held at increasingly higher packing density, that is, increasing higher surface pressure, and consequently, you see a decrease in the percentage of insertion as you increase the packing density of the system. Another thing that you can do is to look at a dose response. So how would you change the response of the system as you enhance the dose of the particular system? So as you can see, over the same time course, if you increase the surface concentration of your PG1, you see a corresponding increase of the level of disruption from the morphology, as well as the relative area increase. So these all jive with the fact that a tighter packing is much harder to get in compared to a looser packing, and the dose response is very prominent here, that the higher the dose, not surprisingly, would increase its ability to intercalate into the film. So one of the things you can do in terms of talking about the real-life lipid is that you cannot really change the pressure, but you can change the packing density by altering the tail. So you can change it from a saturated tail that we use not because it's physiologically relevant, but because that allows us to monitor the morphological changes that we show you, whereas the unsaturated tail, which is much more physiologically relevant, but we cannot monitor. So now that we have monitored, let's see what happened if we change the tail. So you see in all the cases, you see the corresponding increase in the level of insertion as you change from a disaturated tail to a monounsaturated system, irrespective of the head group of the system. One thing that is very peculiar is the case of the lipid A. So again, the gram-negative bacteria has two membranes, the outer membrane, which is not the target membrane, but in order to go to the target membrane, which is on the inside, it has to break open the outer membrane. And what you see here is that the same assay that we do, compressing the lipid A to the same surface pressure, what you see initially is that it would actually insert and go up to the film, increasing the relative area. But up to a certain point, it completely destabilized the film. Eventually, the film just destabilized and disrupted. And so what we think is happening is that in order to get to the plasma membrane, which is the target membrane, this is the way for it to really break open the outer membrane to get to its target phase. In order to really get at some of the similar information that Hui wants to look at in terms of the orientation of the peptide, as well as how is the disruptive power of the peptide on the system, we resort to grazing incident X-ray diffraction. So in our case, it's a monolayer that is sitting at the air-water interface, and we're coming in with an X-ray beam at a very small angle, at such a small angle that would create total external reflection. So now if I have 2D crystallite or 2D powder that is on the surface, it would give rise to diffraction. So if I have a position sensitive detector and I scan the two theta direction, I would pick up the Bragg peak. So what is shown here is the binning of, say, 10 of this position detector denomination together. So when you're going in this direction, you're going off specula, you're going in the z direction. And what you see from this is that we have a surface that has materials that would pack in such a way that would give rise to those Bragg peaks. So what is shown here is that if I were to start off with a pure DPPG film at the pressure that we look at, you see these two peaks, and these two peaks is due to a distorted hexagonal type of packing. If you have a hexagonal type of packing, so you have six neighbors at equal distance from one another, they would just fold on top of each other, giving you one single peak. But now if you were to dilate your lattice, you have four neighbors further apart, two neighbors closer, you would get these two peaks such that the integrated intensity of one is double that of the other. But no matter what type of ordering that they have, when you put the PG1 in the subface, over time, you actually lost all the Bragg peak. So this corroborates our fluorescence microscopy results, showing that the Bragg peak is really lost and showing that the ordering is being disrupted by the insertion of the PG1 into the system. So now, as a first pass, it's easy for us to change the concentration, to change the lipid composition, to look at this using a monolayer. Let's now go to a more realistic system to look at a supportive bilayer. So 2 days ago, Jay showed you some really beautiful pictures of his work on supportive bilayer, and he talked about there's always an ad layer of water between the lower leaflet and the substrate surface. So the substrate of choice for us is microsurface because you can cleave it so that it would be atomically flat. And so we do the same thing of just putting on top of the surface this lipid bilayer by vesicle rupture experiment. So a lot of people have actually tried before to use atomic force microscopy, trying to look for those holes that has been somewhat elusive. You know, we got evidence from various type of technique, but nobody has really seen it. And in those work, all they reported, all they could report, is that, well, they saw a change in the roughness of the surface, and there's more undulation on the surface. But and in those experiments, they use a contiguous bilayer. So usually people use like 6 milligram per milliliter of vesicle. They would rupture it, they would form a continuous bilayer, they flush out the excess vesicle that is not reacting. But instead, what we decided to do, instead of having a continuous bilayer, is that we would form bilayer patches. So instead of going 6 milligram per milliliter, we go to 3 microgram per milliliter. So now what you're seeing, the contrast, is that the bright ones are the bilayer stack on a bare microsurface. So in a JSON experiment, you also see these type of bilayer stacks on top of just a bare microsurface. So if I were to use a low concentration of antimicrobial peptide, you really don't see much of a difference before and after 47 minutes after the PG1 being introduced. And if I were to scan on the surface of the mica, I really can't tell because I only have 18 amino acid sequence and I don't see any absorption on the surface. Not because it's not there, but because probably my tip might be moving it, I cannot see, nor do I see any change in the thickness of the bilayer that is there. So even though it's absorbing on the surface, which we believe that it is, we could not tell. However, if you go to a high concentration, so now I'm just doubling the concentration of the PG1, again, I'm still using a sphingoionic lipid. Just for technical reason, I'm gonna show you some that actually have the anionic lipid in it that is more closer related to the bacterial cell surface. The first thing that you see, the first type of disruption that you see is an edge instability. So even though we still couldn't see what's on here, what's on top, but clearly the peptide is doing something. It is absorbing at least to first order at the end, and we have reason to believe that it is also on the surface, but the absorption of the peptide to the edge changes the line tension and leading to these fingering instability that is seen at the edge, and over time, you can see it more vividly. Now, if I were to even increase the concentration further, what you see indeed are these pores formation. We try to do a threshold to see whether we have an area increase, but we have so many little dots on the surface, and the edge is so rough that it's very hard to say. But regardless, what you see is that, first of all, the smooth edge becomes this rugged arm sticking out. And the secondly, you clearly see these nanometer length scale pores that are formed. On top of that, we also see a thinning effect. And you have to take these numbers with a grain of salt, because basically, tapping on top of the surface, so sort of like jumping on top of a water bed from time to time. So the effective real thickness, you have to take it with a grain of salt, but statistically, there is a difference between the average height of the MPC in the absence of the PG1 and the one that formed these pore formation. So one of the questions that was raised earlier is, what is the mechanism of interaction? So what we believe is happening is actually this carpet model, whereby initially the peptide adsorbed to the surface, and the adsorption up to certain concentration lead to this cooperative change in orientation due to the forming these pores, and at the same time leading to the loss of materials due to micellization on the surface. Another question that was raised in one of the first slides that Huey has was that, is this a cooperative process? How does it know to kill the bacterial surfaces and not to kill the sphingionic mammalian cell surfaces? The only difference we think is the dose response. So if you find something that has a window whereby at low concentration it is not harmful to the mammalian cell membrane, but harmful to, yes?
Is that the same picture? Is that just time difference in that picture, or is it two different?
This is the same domain.
That's the same domain?
Yeah. So this is before and after. Okay? So if that is the case, then if you were to have your dose, so if this is the for any piece G, and this is the curve for any PC, and this is the dose that we have, if you were to administer at the intermediate concentration, then you'll be able to kill this, but not to calm this. Then the question remains, is the mechanism the same? So what is shown here now is a mixed lipid monolayer with both a sphingionic as well as the anionic lipid in there. And what you see is, this is an animation. Let's see if it works. So these are all sort of slewing together AFM images that are taken. And as you know, it takes minutes to take the AFM. So the initial state and the final state are separated by 47 minutes from one another. But what you see is that it is all of them happening at the same time, becomes unstable, forming these arms. You also see from the coloring that the end stage is a lower thickness as opposed to the initial state. So we're very excited about this because, yes?
Just out of curiosity, how do you get a negatively charged membrane to absorb a mica?
Okay, so that is the tough part. This one has calcium in it to help bridge the surfaces. So that's why all the initial data that we have is just with PC. It's much cleaner, it's much easier to absorb. Then you can dial in with the concentration of the PG into the system, and you need a divalent cation to help bridge to initially open it up.
That could already lead to phase separation of your lipids, right?
Yeah.
PG phase separates from the PC, and I don't know what consequences that would have.
Yeah, so you can argue about the phase separation, but if you were to do the same experiment with POPG and POPC, then that also you will still see the similar type of morphology. So we cannot really tell on the sort of local length scale whether there is phase separation. In the PC and PG case, when they're mixed together because of the chain being the same, they don't really phase separate, so they mix well together. But I cannot tell on this level. But regardless of this, in the case of the PC case, you see the same kind of phenomena. Does it make sense? Yes, Dennis. No, this is, as far as we know, this is the first time that really have seen these pores as they happen. Yeah.
I'm also struck by the pore in the middle of the big domain.
Then
look at
here?
Yeah.
Whoops.
Disappears.
Yes. PowerPoint has that capability.
It seems to start circular and then it gets very fractal.
Okay, so.
As do the other edges, right?
So maybe this is a more, this is more realistic, but that is just easier. So this is a movie that we make. So this is the same system. I'm just gonna step through it, if you can see. Right, so this is the beginning stage at time equal to 0. 1 minute later, 2 minute later. So you already see the first pass is that the edge is still the first place to go because it goes also with the fingering instability that it on the surface. And then as you go, you see the edges of the different one started to get in touch with one another. And that has to do with yesterday's talk, Gary's talk, about, you know, how the fact that you have a system that is connected to one another and the memory of the system of the film, how changes in one is how action that is far away might affect the local action of the activity of the surface. So, you know, for the theorists in the audience who are interested in seeing in simulating that, and I think, you know, there's a large scale effect as well as a local scale effect, because if you have a contiguous film, you could not see this type of instability going on. So are you talking about this part now, the hole in the middle?
Even the initial stage. The initial stage, I guess, and maybe it's not obvious as you go through it, but there's no real circular form.
There's no, sorry?
There's no circular form.
Oh, so this is also, in this case, this is resolution limited, so I cannot tell you exactly what is the pore size because of the convolution.
Shape, I think you get the shape, and that's what, you know, you see what goes on at the edges, but the biggest domain there, in the very middle, you don't see a circular pore.
I
mean, you cannot really tell.
If it has a fingering instability, as soon as it forms, it's going to start fingering.
Yeah, so the finger, if you were to think about the think about the domain edge, which a cell membrane doesn't have an edge, but the pore has an edge. So if you think of the pore and you opening up the pore to form the edge, this tells you that there's a propensity for them to first absorb at those locations, at the edge of it. And with this resolution, you cannot really see the pore, but I was hoping that you can see it. There is, in these cases, I mean, some of them are circular looking, for instance, but it's resolution limited.
This is
so.
A different limit.
So this is the limit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So we also did some giant Unimolar vesicle to see what happened in the sucrose glucose gradient inside and outside, and what happened. In this case, we have an opposite, so things actually leaked out, and you see the crumpling, basically, of the membrane because of now pores form, things are leaking out from the inside to the outside. So I'm going to tell you very briefly about the attempt of using a completely de novo design to try to mimic what nature gives us. So you know that the peptide have the backbone, have the alpha carbon and the nitrogen here, and the side chain is attached to the alpha carbon. And there are many attempts by several groups looking at non-natural amino acids. For example, the Barron group at Northwestern have been working on peptoid. So instead of having the side chain attached to the alpha carbon, they just move it over to attached to this nitrogen. And for example, they have looked at longsurfactant mimic, and that seems to work or mimic pretty well the natural amino acids sequence peptide. Or there has been other work, for example, looking at the beta peptide. But what if we just even completely gone beyond whatever backbone that nature has given us, and just go look at something just has to do with its structural propensity. So for example, this is the picture of the PG1 that we have been working with, and it has a hydrophobic side on the edge, and the hydrophilic side on the edge, and the hydrophobic side on the center. What if we just use a polymer or a small molecule and really try to mimic the hydrophobicity, hydrophilicity that is in the system? So this is work actually done by Greg Tu at UMass Amherst. They're interested in really looking at polymeric design to allow them to mimic natural amino acid sequence. Yes?
You have a bullet. It looks like you're following through on structural rigidity. And I'm just, so, and that looks like it's built into the polymer.
That's right, yeah.
But did you do an experiment with the protegrin where, you know, in beta-mercaptoethanol, where you get rid of the fold, the stabilization of the fold?
No, we haven't done that. So what we the structural rigidity point is to really mimic the disulfide bond that is there. But that's a good suggestion.
Did you show that's important?
Yeah, but we haven't shown that.
Because I thought we heard that when these things, mm-hmm. they start there in solution, or at least the earlier,
yes.
This morning,
yes.
As random coils. That's not true here.
Yeah, so the structural rigidity is actually directly referring to mimic the, I think, the fact that this particular peptide does have structural integrity.
Why is that important?
Yeah, so I haven't done that, but that's a good suggestion.
It is important. I've seen a paper where they actually take out the disulfide bonds and they saw this peptide actually not kill this bacteria, but it actually go through the membrane.
But we haven't looked at that mutant ourselves. We look at several mutants, but that's not one of the ones that we have looked at.
You don't have to mutate. You just do the experiments in reducing.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay, so this is the upshot of what happened. What is shown here is the minimal inhibition concentration. So, you know, the lower that it is, the more potent it is. And this is the hemolytic concentrations. So that the, also what you want is that the higher concentration that it is, the that is necessary to kill the red blood cell, the better off you are. And if you look at the selectivity, it's the ratio between the HC50 and the MIC. So this is the PG1, and it has a good selectivity, which is what you want. But even with this MPE, even though it doesn't have the high selectivity as the natural peptide, it is doing pretty well in terms of it has a 1:88 selectivity between the two. So if I were to compare the same assay with the relative area increase between the spinionic versus the anionic lipid, you also see that there is a selection of the PG of the MPE for the more charged, negatively charged head group, as opposed to the spinionic head group on the system. And if you were to look at the morphology, you also see the before and after picture of the insertion and the destabilization of the order domain formation that is on the surface. So I'm just going up fast because we're running out of time. Again, GID confirms that you lost the ordering of the system in the case when you put the MPE into the subphase. And if you were to do another type of reflectivity experiment, whereby another type of X-ray experiment, whereby instead of coming in just at a small angle, you change the incoming angle, but you park your detector at the speculum reflected point, and you just look at the change of the reflectivity as a function of the momentum transfer in the z direction. So this gives you information of the electron density distribution in the z direction because it's embedded in the reflectivity curve there. What you can see is how the MPE is interpolated into the membrane. So basically, these are the curve that you see, and you fit it to a box model so that you know exactly the number of electrons in the tail, you know the number of electrons in the head, that there's hydration, then there's interfaces, so you have a smearing effect to take into thermal fluctuation and so on and so forth. And we come up with this picture of the before and after of how the MPE is actually interpolating to the tail group region, disrupting the ordering of the acyl chain. Yes?
That grazing interface, is that on the Langmuir trough?
This is on the Langmuir trough.
Because I would assume that just by capillary fluctuations, the surface moves at least by a couple of nanometers.
Yeah, so.
But your resolution appears to be much higher, so I'm confused here.
Yeah, so the surface roughness usually is just a couple of angstrom on the between the layer. So between the. So if I have this interface, whereby this is my subphase, this is my head, this is my tail, and this is my air interface, the resolution that you have is in the z direction is basically limited by the thermal fluctuation that induces to smear out the interfacial discreteness.
Okay, this is 7 nanometers.
No, so it is not. It is not that high. For capillaries, because now I actually have a surfactant on the surface. So Luke Carson has done this calculation in the 50s, looking at what happened if you have a monolayer of material at the interface. It changes the ability of the thermal, so it's a thermal fluctuation versus the surface tension response to form this waves. And as you increases the surfactant concentration, it changes the response behavior, therefore lower the amplitude of the surface wave thing. But we can talk more about it. Okay, so I'm gonna spend the last 15 minutes or so talking about the opposite problem. So this is not typical in my lab, but if I am an electric worker, I work on a high voltage line, I have a shock, I went to the emergency room. You're the doctor, you saw that I have the burned tissue, you excise me, patch me up, and send me home. 2 days later, I came back with a limp and touch of the high voltage shock turned blue, at which point necrosis started, the only thing you can do is to chop it off, which I'm very sad. And so what it could happen, what is that you can have the char tissue, which is, you know, you're getting back your carbon, which is the very gross form of damage you can do to the system. But you can also do is that you make the membrane loses its integrity. So as a function of time, the intracellular materials leak out. And electroporation, for example, as you know, has been used for gene delivery, gene therapy, with the assumption that whatever pore that you form would seal at some point. And the question is that, can you enhance the chance of those sealing? So what is shown here are experiments done in Raphael Lee's lab. He's a plastic surgeon. So he takes red skeletal muscle cells and he shock it with pulses that are separated so that you won't really burn in tissue. And what he looks at is, if I were to load the cell with some dye and see how the leakage from the interior of the cell to the outside, if I just have the control with nothing there, no protectant, over 30 minutes, most of the intracellular materials leaks out. If I put dextrin in, it looks like it is better than having nothing, but the slope is still negative. So over 2 hours, maybe, things would have leaked out. But using this tri-block copolymer, chloronates or polastomer, depending on which community you come from, you can actually get a pretty nice plateau region even 5 minutes after the injury. So another thing he did is to look at, well, what happened if you were to change the condition when you have nothing, you have a saline control, you put dextrin in. If you put the system of polastomer after you shock the cell versus if you put the polastomer before you shock the cell, you see that if it is already there to go heal the wound, it can actually arrest 96% of the intracellular materials. So what is this magic material? Also inspired by David's talk about the dye, I have to include this slide into it. So a similar type of polymer has been used in other type of injury, for example, spinal cord injury, for animals that were involved in an accident and were paralyzed from waist down. So you might have seen these dogs with a wheelchair at the back, they're $300 a pop. And once they have that, they could go run around, catch the ball, jump in trees and stuff like that. So they're pretty happy. If they don't have it, they really have no mobility. And so a couple of years ago, it made it even to the popular press that they actually use polyethylene glycol as well as polastomer to inject into these dogs. There's an 8-hour window that they could do it. And I've seen some movies of that. It's pretty miraculous that over the period of 3 weeks, the dog gained back maybe 80% of the mobility. So if you're interested, you can search on the web of Richard Borgen's lab. That's what they're doing. Or in another way that you can hurt the membrane in terms of its integrity is the hypoxia ischemia reperfusion injury. So if you have a sudden starvation of oxygen, that doesn't seem to be hurting you so much, but it's the reperfusion that you have all these oxygen creating the free radical that hurt the cell. So what is shown here are cells that are subjected to the stress. So you know, this green is life, and when it is subjected to the stress, then it dies. But if you subject to the stress in the presence of the polymer, you keep a large percentage of the population alive as well. So what is this polymer? It's a tri-block with a hydrophobic polypropylene oxide in the middle, flanked by two hydrophilic polyethylene oxide on the edge. And what we're interested to see is what is the mode of interaction? So this is just a cartoon. Does it really use the hydrophobic block going into the center with the hydrophilic block outside acting as a steric barrier, preventing things from leaking in and out?
But how large is this one?
Oh, okay, so this is a 188, means that 80% of it is the hydrophobic, is the hydrophilic, and 1.8 kilodalton is the hydrophobic side. So in this particular case, it's on the order of 5 kilodalton in the overall size. These are small, but you can tune it. I won't have time if you're interested. We also have data. We have done tuning it. So we want to see sort of what kinds of interaction. So if you were to inject something in the bloodstream, say, you know, ambulance arrived, you want, time is the essence, you want the materials to get in, we want to make sure that the sealing effect is localized. The last thing you want to do is that for these things to go and disrupt the intact cell. So the kind of assay that we did is similar. We compress it to the bilayer equivalent pressure, hold it constant, inject polymer in the subface, and we see. So what we see in both cases, it doesn't depend on the head group, whether it's charged or not charged, we see that for an intact bilayer packing, there's no way for the polymer to insert. As you lower the packing density, i.e. the loss of the integrity, the structural integrity of the membrane, up to a certain point, you see a small but substantial insertion. Just to make sure that it's real, you lower it more, and boom, the polymer just goes in. So this tells you that it is localized to a particular location where only the damaged cell membrane would be affected. So if it's really doing what we think it's doing, go and pluck up the holes, then would it act as a third wheel when the cell started to heal itself? Would it still be there to prevent the cell from healing? So what is the fate of the polymer? So this is a different type of experiment. The magenta line is just the DPPC isotherm, and then we spread another film onto the surface, so a new experiment. We spread a film so that the lipid is at a very high area per molecule, or very low packing density, and we inject the polymer into the surface. Almost instantaneously, the polymer would go up due to the surface activity of the polymer, and notice that the surface activity actually is below the bilayer equivalent pressure. But if we wait and we compress the system up to a certain point before it gets the bilayer equivalent pressure, it recovers the same slope, suggesting at this location, the polymer is actually being squeezed out from the surface, leaving the film with just lipid at the interface. In the case when you change the head group charge, it doesn't matter, still the same thing, surface absorption, compression, and exclusion from the surface below the bilayer equivalent pressure. So if I were to go and do the same X-ray reflectivity data, if I were to look at what happened if I lower the area per molecule, increase the packing density of the system, and this is the equivalent electron density fit, what you see effectively is nothing very exciting, but just as you compress the film becomes less tilted, and so you get a thicker film at the lower area per molecule compared to a thinner film at the high area per molecule. But something different when you put the polymer into the surface. Now, when I started off with a low concentration of the molecule in the surface, I no longer see a uniform population. Part of the population is polymer rich, giving rise to a reflectivity curve that looks nothing like a lipid reflectivity curve. And the other part resumes and having these hump that is equivalent to the pure lipid case. So these data suggest to us that, well, you know, maybe they really hate each other enough that the polymer and the lipid actually phase separate, forming a heterogeneous surface. And does this have anything to do with its ability to help the cell pack tighter together? So I'm just going to skip this. One hint of how the polymer leads to membrane sealing is this. Instead of running a constant pressure experiment now that would adjust the pressure and changes the area, now I fix the area, then the pressure has to change when the polymer goes up. And the first hint of what's going on is that, indeed, when you inject the polymer, you always see a jump in the surface pressure, and eventually it levels off to some equilibrium value. So does that mean that the polymer insertion actually forces the lipid to pack more tightly? Well, we cannot really tell from fluorescence microscopy, because if I were to show you images from this location, whereby you have the gas-liquid coexistence phase, when the polymer goes up, everything just blacks out, so you cannot tell whether it is polymer-rich or lipid-rich. So we have to resort to grazing incident X-ray diffraction. On the left-hand side shown here is just a pure DPPC. Again, when I decrease the area per molecule, I started off with a disorder phase, which doesn't really have any Bragg peak, to the emergence of the Bragg peak, to the growth of the Bragg peak. But notice that even at 63 square angstrom per molecule, you don't see any Bragg peaks from here. Now, if you have the polymer in the subphase, even at 107 square angstrom, you already see the signature of the Bragg peak. And the further you increase in pressure or lower this area, you see the equivalent growth of this Bragg peak on the surface. So what that means is that because of the hydrophobic mismatch between the PPO part of the polymer and the acyl chain of the lipid, they really hate each other enough so that they phase separate from one another. By taking up some physical position at the interface, the polymer actually corrals the lipid to pack tightly so that they regain the barrier function that is on the surface. So what is shown here is a simulation that is done by Igal Schleifer from Purdue University, and the blue dots are the lipid, and the red dots other polymer. And so what you see as you were decreasing the size of the surface, so it's gonna loop. So even at the instant when the polymer goes up to the surface, you immediately see this ordering of this hexagonal type of packing on the surface. And so the first thing is that the lipid got corralled by the polymer existence at the interface. The second part of it is that when push comes to shove, the polymer eventually desorbs from the surface, forming these, leaving the surface. And these corroborate with what we saw experimentally. And in order for these to happen, two things have to apply. The first criteria is, as I said, you have to have the hydrophobic mismatch between the two, giving rise to the phase separation and hence the corralling. But in order for the lipid, for the polymer to really desorb from the surface, you also need to have a quasi-long-range repulsive interaction given rise by the polyethylene glycol repulsive interaction, forcing them to go down into the subphase. So I think I'm gonna skip a lot of this, but I just want to show you just one last thing. So now we go from monolayer to bilayers to vesicle. We want to look at vesicle, and these are cryo-EM images of vesicle, trying to see what's happening when the polymer is interacting with the surface. So just to show you what motivated this experiment is that when we make this vesicle lipid mixture with the polymer in it, we find that you can have a turbid to clear transition pretty easily when you toggle it up and down the temperature. And the question is, the turbidity has to do with scattering of whatever entities that is in the sample, and the turning it to clear has to do with the changing of the scattering size of the material. So we want to really see what's going on. So what we found is that the polymer lipid interaction can actually is affected by the phase state of the lipid itself. When you have the system above the fluid the main transition temperature of the lipid, you form these nice vesicle system, and the polymer, when we dry it and rehydrate it together, the polymer is actually embedded in the lipid matrix, forming these nice big vesicles. But when we cool down the system to 4 degrees, all of a sudden the only thing you see are these sort of football type of shape, and they're much smaller in length scale than the vesicle that you see, and we have done dynamic like scattering to show that. But when you heat it up, you see the
scale.
Oh, I'm sorry. So what you're seeing here, one of these, are on the order of 100 nanometers in diameter and size. And so when you heat it up, you see the transformation of most of this football shape into this vesicular shape on the surface. So what's going on? What we think is going on is that when the film becomes rigid, then there's a cost to bend the system. And what they effectively wanted to is to form bicell discs with the edge being stabilized by the polymer. So we're looking at a single bilayer thickness. And yesterday we talked about the ripple phase transition, and we caught one of these forming this sort of, you know, ruffle chips or crinkle chip that has this very quintessential length scale that is due to the ripple phase. But we also caught one of these guys on the side. So this is one bicell disc that is caught sideways, and the thickness commensurate with what a single bilayer should be, and also the undulation that has to do with it.
So what scale is this at?
Sorry?
What scale is this at?
So this thickness is on the order of 5 nanometers.
But the ripple?
Oh, the ripple length scale, it is here, is on the order of 20-some angstrom from peak-to-peak location.
Yeah.
20-some nanometer peak-to-peak location. So that commensurate with what people have seen earlier work. Yes, that's right. So this is the pre-transition temperature. So this is the picture that we have. Depending on the phase state of the lipid, you can actually toggle between the round vesicular state versus this 2D corralling state.